Are you guys ready for a little bit of rest?
Relaxation?
And Ruri.
No, you're supposed to say radio.
Radio.
Because we have a radio station. It's rest, relaxation, and radio.
Radio.
7 to 9 on Thursdays. KDLL 91.9.
Guys, that's it.
Hello, and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell. For our last segment this month, I'd like to talk a little bit about the winter warmer beers out there. Given that part of this month's beer news was announcing the winners of the Winter Warmer competition at this year's Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival, I thought I should take a few minutes to talk about just what a winter warmer beer was. Winter warmers are not technically a true beer style, but they can certainly be considered a widespread brewing tradition. The custom of brewing a stronger than normal dark ale for drinking against the chills of the coldest months of the year is likely as old as brewing itself in Northern Europe. Earlier unhopped or lightly hopped ales were particularly suited for being heated and spiced, giving rise to winter drinks such as the ale posset, a drink consisting of piping hot ale mixed with bread, milk, sugar, ginger, and nutmeg. Other beer-based winter drinks included lamb's wool, a combination of hot spiced ale and roasted apples, and the egg flip, made from hot mild ale mixed with eggs, brandy, and nutmeg. In Britain, winter ales were also flavored by the traditional method of floating spiced toast on their surface, a custom which survived at least until the start of the 19th century. The rise of hopped beer, which reacts badly to being heated, seems to have meant the decline of such hot ale drinks. However, drinkers continue to desire stronger, sweeter, and often darker beers during the winter months. In London, in particular, this desire was met by the original Burton Ale. As I discussed on a previous show, this style of beer was made by the brewers of Burton-on-Trent before they began producing highly hopped pale ales for the India market. Burton Ale became a widely available beer in Britain, particularly during the winter months. Bass No. 1, the strongest Burton Ale in the company's range, was called in advertisements around 1909, quote, "the winter drink," end quote. It was a very robust beer, and bottles from the first decade of the 20th century are still enjoyed occasionally today, over a century later. At least 8 London brewers were making Burtons in the mid-1950s, with Courage Brewing sending out cards to its pubs reading, "Courage Burton is now on sale for the winter season." However, the fall of popularity of darker ales in the 1960s meant that Burton Ale almost disappeared, with about the last one being brewed by Young's at Wandsworth in London. In 1971, Young's changed the name of its Burton Ale to Winter Warmer, reflecting its seasonal nature and particular appeal. Another London brewer, Fuller's, replaced its Burton with a strong, bitter winter beer in 1969. 2 years later, this beer was renamed Extra Special Bitter, or ESB. It quickly became so popular that it was moved from a seasonal brew to a year-round offering and has inspired a host of imitators both in Britain and the U.S. Speaking of the U.S., the tradition of winter warmer beers or seasonal old ales was revived, like so many other beer styles, in the mid-1970s onward by the growing craft beer movement. The seasonal beers are generally 5-8% alcohol by volume, have an emphasis on darker malts, and may incorporate spices, harkening back to the old custom of concocting drinks of heated and spiced ale. Looking at the beers available locally, Kenai River Brewing's Winter Warlock Old Ale would certainly fit broadly within the winter warmer category. While unspiced, it's brewed at above average strength and released each year on October 1st. A similar style of beer to the winter warmer is the Belgian-style Strong Dark Ale. In this style, Cynosure Brewing of Anchorage produces No, which took third place in the winter warmer category at this year's Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival. Midnight Sun Brewing, for many years, has brewed its Monk's Mistress Belgian-style Strong Dark Ale, but just this month it has released Dark Night, which it explicitly calls a winter warmer. This limited-release beer weighs in at 8.7% alcohol by volume, 30 IBUs, and was aged in used port wine barrels. Whether you choose a local example or one brewed outside, winter warmers make an excellent beer choice as we all endure the cold and dark of an Alaskan winter and dream of the coming spring.
KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Next up, we've got an interview with Don Stead of Grace Ridge Brewing in Homer. Hey, Don, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. So you guys have been in business, what, it'll be...
3 years in May.
3 years come May. Oh, boy, the time sure flies by fast. And you guys obviously opened in Homer for the second brewery after long-established Homer Brewing Company. It'd been there for like 20 years before you guys came in. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your brewing background, how you got into brewing and commercial brewing?
You know, that's almost a horribly long story, but I'll try and shorten it up. I got a homebrew kit for Christmas, and I've been brewing ever since. So I've been brewing since 1988, right after my second son was born. But it was always homebrewing, and it was always, you know, 5-gallon batch. But I always thought, gee, this is really great. I'm making a good product. At least everybody tells me so. Maybe I should do this commercially. And then it was always, no, you can't do it commercially because you have a good job and you have health insurance. So then I retired. And as soon as you do that, now you don't have a good job and everything. You have a nice retirement, but you don't have a job. And so you're sitting around and wondering what to do. And I said, well, I could go build houses or I could open a brewery. And this time I was given permission to open a brewery. And so off I stumbled into opening a brewery.
So for the folks who haven't had a chance to visit your brewery, why don't you describe your brewing setup a little bit?
Well, we are a 3-barrel brewery. So we have a nice little 3-barrel brew house and 3 fermenters and 2 bright tanks. Makes us a little bit capacity constrained. We don't have a lot of cold storage, so we try to keep things just as fresh as possible. In fact, today I'm cleaning kegs and I'm dumping beer that we think is too old, which is always a real problem for me. It makes me feel bad when I pour beer down the drain.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's like killing your kids.
Yeah, just about, you know. Something that has to be done, we get rid of the bad beer, or at least beer that we think is bad. We've had people go, oh, no, it's not bad, it's great. And we're like, no, it's getting bad, and it's time for it to go. So we're emptying some kegs down the drain. But anyway, you know, we're right here at the corner of Ocean Drive and the Spit. We have a nice little tap room, and we always like to see people come in and sample our wares.
Hey, you just recently, for the Christmas holidays, you branched out into actually bottling some of your beers. I know I was lucky enough to pick some up here at Country Liquors, so why don't you tell folks about that?
Well, it all comes down to money and logistics and other things, but we started bottling some of our special beers, the Oyster Catcher Stout and what we call the Raspberry Blonde. And well, it was earlier this year, and I think we also did some last year. And we were targeting 22-ounce bottles, trying to capture a little bit of additional market that way. And it was very well received. Our Oyster Catcher and our Raspberry Blonde sold out in less than a month. But that was the summertime. And in the wintertime, I did just back in November, we did 4 special beers. Scottish Ale, pale ale that was made with local hops, our winter cranberry ale, which is actually a really nice red ale with cranberry and rosemary. And then, what was the last one?
Honey porter.
The honey porter, the Baltic honey porter. Thank you very much. That was another one that has a long story to it. But those were four beers that we thought were very special. And so we released them prior to the holidays, tried to get them into some of the stores. And so we were very lucky to get them into the grog shop here in Homer and Country Liquors up in Kenai. You know, we're almost out of those four packs. I did 120 of them, and all of my bottling is by hand, so I sit there and bottle and cap and label everything all by hand. Because, again, we're very small. We're cramped on space. We can't store them for very long.
I mean, obviously, you said you come out of a homebrew background. Have you got any sort of a, what I would like to call a brewing philosophy? Is there a particular theme that you try to go with your beers, or styles that you really like, or styles that you really don't like so you don't brew, or anything along those lines?
That good question. You know, I do come out of a homebrewing background. You know, some of the beers that I do like to brew are the wheat beers, the fruit wheat beers, especially the ones that my wife used to love. I brewed those all the time. But I also like alts, which is what our Otter Bay Amber is an alt-styled beer. And I think I've been brewing that since 89 when I won gold in Del Mar at Southern California Exposition. Of course, homebrewing then was very limited.
Yeah, I remember.
but I did do well at that particular competition with that beer. And I've been making it ever since. And I think it's a really good beer. But otherwise, I'd never brewed an IPA before until I opened this brewery and everybody told me I have to brew an IPA. Working with my son, we came up with a recipe, made the IPA, and now I have to say it's our best seller. You know?
Yeah, Sadie Peak is a very nice beer. I have very much enjoyed it every time I've had it.
Oh, okay. Good. Thank you.
I know another, I won't say it's unique, but another great thing that you guys do is you use all of your taproom tips to support local charities, right?
That is correct. Yep. So all the tips that we bring in goes back out the door. We actually treat it as a liability, not as income. Yeah, that's accounting speak. So, yes, it all goes back out. Every month we have a new nonprofit in Homer that we support through the tips. And it's turned out to be a very positive thing in the community. People really, really love it.
Well, I can see where that, you know, would be appreciated. And it kind of goes to speak to the idea, which we're just talking about earlier on the show, that the idea that your local brewery is really a part of the local community. You're not looking to try to sell your beer in Anchorage or Fairbanks or anywhere else. You're focused on dealing with your local customers and taking care of your local market. So
that is cool.
That's just another aspect there.
Yep.
So what's
yep.
your plans for the future, Don? Where do you see Grace Ridge Brewing in 5 years?
In 5 years is a little bit murky, but, you know, we are looking at new property. We are looking to move again because we are very small and very capacity constrained. We can't produce the beer in quantities that we feel will make us a little bit more profitable. And so right now we're looking at properties. We've narrowed it down to 3 properties, and we're trying to decide how are we going to make this work. And I'm working on a new business plan. We would probably break ground, we hope, this year in the summer and get the site prepped and start erecting the building over the winter and move in 2021 into the new building. That's the hope anyway.
Yeah. Obviously, you want to expand your brew house. Are you thinking to go to 7 or 10 barrels? You know, what do you feel like is the right size for you?
Right now, we're looking at 10. We believe that we can support that in Homer, Soldotna, Kenai without too much trouble. You know, I mean, self-distribution is always difficult. And we do focus right now on self-distribution. so we'll have to get somebody that's going to distribute for us. Whether it's one of our employees or if somebody else starts distributing for us, we don't really know yet. I think if we're going to start off with one of our employees distributing for us.
All right. Well, wish you good luck in that. Look forward to seeing it. And expansion is always good. Make your beer more available up here, yeah. At least, so we don't have to. I don't have to drive all the way to Homer to get it. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, Don. We appreciate it, and good luck. And we're going to see you up here for the Frozen River Festival, I hope.
Yes, indeed. Frozen River, I'll be there.
All right, looking forward to it. So you have a wonderful day. Thanks a lot. That's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. Hope you've enjoyed our show. I'll leave you with the following closing quote. This month's closing thought comes from the great scientist Louis Pasteur, the man who discovered that yeast is responsible for fermentation. He said, "A bottle of beer contains more philosophy than all the books in the world." And on that note, this is your host Bill Howell here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Cheers.